You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. I'm Art Ray. Today's guest is Henry Reed, Ph.D. Dr. Henry Reed has been the prime designer of ARE's Psychic Development Program in its various aspects for the past 20-some years. He is one of the trainers of the ARE's most successful and long-running psychic training programs, Be Your Own Psychic. It's the Edgar Cayce Legacy Conference, which is scheduled in Virginia Beach from October 19th to the 23rd. He has published scientific articles on his research into intuition and psychic functioning and is a regular contributor to ARE's member magazine, Venture Inward. He is the author of Edgar Cayce on Awakening Your Psychic Powers, Edgar Cayce on Channeling Your Higher Self, and Your Intuitive Heart. He is also on staff at Atlantic University and is a regular mentor for ARE online learning e-groups, including Developing Your Psychic Ability, which begins September 21st, and The Spiritual Applications of Self-Hypnosis, which begins November 16th. To find out more about e-groups, go to edgarcayce.org, click on Education, and then click on e-groups. To find out more about the Be Your Own Psychic Conference, go to edgarcayce.org, click on Events, and then click on Conferences. Well, thank you for coming on the show today. How long have you been involved with the Edgar Cayce material?
I became first involved, I suppose, when I was a graduate student studying at UCLA for my doctorate in psychology. That's when I first learned about Edgar Cayce. A friend of mine, James Turrell, who's one of the MacArthur Genius Award winners these days, he was telling me some of his fantastic dreams, and I asked him how he learned to have such dreams, because in graduate school we were learning about dreams more as a medical sample that you would take to the doctor for analysis to find out what was wrong with you. In the 1960s, the psychology of dreaming was primarily a clinical study. But what Edgar Cayce had introduced was the use of dreams by everybody on a personal basis to gain guidance in life. And I'd never heard of such a thing. And that was very intriguing to me. It just struck a bell. I think a lot of people out there have had dreams and they feel that they need to be paid attention to. And I, of course, like many people, didn't remember my dreams. And James Turrell, he helped me build a dream journal and a place to catch the dreams, as it were. And I think 1968 I had the first dream. And if we have a way of giving the viewers or the listeners some links, I have a very important article that I wrote about that. And the healing from alcoholism that came from that dream. And, of course, that made me very much interested in Edgar Cayce. When I graduated with my Ph.D., I started to teach at Princeton University, and after my first lecture to my class, a student came up to me and said that from the way I was presenting the material on the infinite possibilities of the human potential, that I should get involved and learn about Edgar Cayce. So I was hearing this name again and learned about from him. He was from Virginia Beach, the student, that the Cayce Center was down a few hours' drive south of me from New Jersey. And so then later, it was about 1972, I think my second year at Princeton, I was attended a conference at the Menninger Foundation in Topeka, Kansas. And I was discussing with a man the controversial approach to research that I was doing at Princeton University, where I was charging the students to be in my experiments rather than paying them with college credits, because I didn't want to treat them like lab rats where I was extracting information at their expense. Rather, I was trying to encourage them to participate with me in an experimental enterprise to see what they would be capable of accomplishing. And because they would be learning something and getting something out of it, I felt that they should pay to be in the experiments. Well, the man I was talking to was very intrigued by this, and he said his granddad had often proposed that a different approach to research would be important in order to reveal the human potential. And I asked him who his granddad was, and he said it was Edgar Casey. And it turned out I was talking to Charles Thomas Casey, the grandson of Edgar Casey. And he subsequently invited me to become a consultant for the Edgar Casey Center while I was there at Princeton to design research in a new way. And that would bring out people's abilities. And I should say again, I just published a peer-reviewed paper that I have online for our listeners could go and read.
Oh, yes.
About the history of that research and what it showed in terms of the power of altruism to generate psychic experiences in people, intentional psychic experiences. One of the things that Edgar Casey had pointed out to parapsychologists who were studying ESP in the laboratory, but they were only getting mixed results, and they asked Casey, you know, who was functioning so well, what are we doing wrong? And he said, well, basically, what you're doing is, one, is you really put the emphasis on, can you do this? Can the person be psychic, which really builds up their ego and gets their own self-consciousness in the way. And then second, you don't really give them any reason for doing it. And if you would study how telepathy happens spontaneously in the world, you would see that it happens as a result of relationships and things that are going on between people and so on, and need to know and dynamics and danger and love and all kinds of things that are affecting the relationship. But in the laboratory experiments, they just strip all that away, and all they have left is the ego challenge of, can you be psychic? And he said if instead you would put up situations in which people really wanted to reach out and help one another or be with one another, but all the normal ways were blocked, and the only thing that was available to them was psychic channels, that they would use those, and you would see that, and you would start understanding how telepathy functions in normal life. And that's, like I say, like what I have done, and I would really recommend to your listeners that, you know, that you read this paper. It's called When Hearts Are Joined, my story of exploring the intuitive connections between all of us. And I think that that's one of the things that makes the conference that we do once a year, the Edgar Casey Legacy Conference, Be Your Own Psychic, that's coming up here in October, so special and so unique, in that what we try to do is set up situations that are more lifelike and show people when there is a need to know and you have a caring and so on, and you learn how to get out of your own way, that you can make these connections with one another, these intuitive connections and psychic experiences and so on. And people start learning that they can relate to one another, not as people who live inside of tin cans and are reaching out through some special means of through special wires or channels to communicate to one another, but that we don't live in tin cans, that our nature isn't truly physical, but our nature is experience, our nature is consciousness. And when we start relating in that way, we start making connections with one another on components of our interests and abilities and experiences in life and so on, and not so much in terms of the externals, you know, of what our roof looks like or what we're wearing or the color of our hair and things, those external kinds of things that can easily be seen with the eyes. One of the things that they learn is that they can exchange information that cannot be seen with the eyes, and they have a lot to offer to one another in terms of these invisible dynamics, the vibrations and thought forms and so on, the subliminal information that's all around us. One of the things that we can learn is that these things are perceptible, and they can become perceptible when you have the context, when there is a need to use those and a context for using them and showing people that this is natural and how they can do this. And they discover, hey, this has been around all the time. I just have ignored it, just not paid any attention to it. So what were you asking me?
Oh, no, that's interesting. I was asking you how you first became familiar with the Edgar Casey material, but that's amazing.
I was in graduate school. Like I said, I was, got my doctorate with honors in psychology from UCLA, and I was also involved with Jungian analysis. And so I could bring my background from the study of Carl Jung and his psychology, in which he really showed how the unconscious mind is such an intelligence and creative and connected widely, globally, and intergalactically compared to our rather minuscule, highly sensory-focused conscious mind, so that when I was introduced to Edgar Cayce, I already had a context for understanding his work and saw what he added. What he added to it was the whole notion of service, of being of help to one another. Carl Jung and Edgar Cayce had very similar notions as to the evolutionary thrust of creation. Of course, Carl Jung was using scholarship and spiritual writings going way back, plus his own dreams and his studies and his working with patients, whereas what Edgar Cayce had primarily was his Bible reading and then his going into trance and bringing forth all of this kinds of information that was at first very alien to him. But what I could see, Carl Jung would have predicted, yes, somebody could do, it's possible to do what Edgar Cayce had done.
We'll be right back with more with Henry Reed, Ph.D., on Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. We're back with Henry Reed, Ph.D.
Carl Jung would have predicted, yes, somebody could do, it's possible to do what Edgar Cayce had done. And what if Jung had been aware of Edgar Cayce, what he would have said something like, and I see from Edgar Cayce that what makes a difference between people who are able to bring forth stuff and they actually grow from doing that, and that the information actually serves them, versus people kind of go off on the deep end and go off half-cocked thinking that they've been giving these great revelations that everybody needs to listen to and so on, seems to have to do with Edgar Cayce's purpose in life to actually want to be helpful. And one of the things, too, that he introduced that was through the readings was basically, although people ignored it, don't listen to what I'm saying, but use this as cues and do your own investigation. It's what you learn and you discover and make real in your life that really counts. Anyway, I think Edgar Cayce, Carl Jung would have been very much approved of Edgar Cayce and would have noted that this high idealism with regard to serving others, which is something that Carl Jung didn't have in his psychology, but could certainly recognize from the tradition and religions as to why that is important to as a way of getting beyond ego and getting more into the higher truth. And then, also then to look at it from the point of view of Carl Jung would say, look, I'm a highly educated person. I've been to universities. I speak very many languages. I've read quite a bit. And all of that was able to help me understand my client's dreams. But look at Edgar Cayce. He had no education. And yet look what is coming forth from his unconscious. Carl Jung would say, I need no greater proof than Edgar Cayce's life that what I'm talking about, my psychology, is valid. It's valid, and we can learn from Edgar Cayce about the role of wanting to, it's not just about us, but it's about what we can do for others. And in doing for others, we grow ourselves. So that was his special growth formula for development of one's abilities by using them to help others. And so
wow.
In our Edgar Cayce Legacy Conference, when we set up these training experiences that has that component, let me tell you about dreams, for example, because everybody dreams, but very few, you know, maybe 25% of the population actually remembers a dream on any given morning. But we know from the scientific experiments that everybody dreams from the dream lab. You know, they see that every 90 minutes they get the rapid eye movements and the brainwave changes, and if they wake the person up, they can tell them a dream. And then in the morning, it's when they say, what did you tell us in the middle of the night last night? The person can't even remember, but there it is on tape. So we know that people have several dreams a night, but in the morning very rarely remember them. Now, a certain number of people, and it certainly have been written about, that dreams have a lot of value, that there's guidance and discoveries and self-help and all kinds of things, that the history of the world has been affected by dreams. Robert Moss's book, The Secret History of Dreaming, is a great book outlining all the things that have affected our history that came from dreams, and people are hardly aware of it. So people may have heard that dreams are valuable, but not that many people have actually experienced it. But here, through the Edgar Cayce readings and the technology it suggests, we can now offer to people an exercise that almost guarantees that they'll be able to remember a dream, and not only that, to have a dream that they'll be able to see, hey, this dream was meaningful and is actually doing something constructive. And what is this new technology? Well, we call it the Dream Helper Ceremony, and we take the phrase Dream Helper after Hamburger Helper, because Hamburger Helper is some stuff that you use to make hamburger go better and so on. And this exercise helps people with their dreams, understand dreams, have dreams, recall dreams, value dreams, and so on. And what is the special formula, the special new technology? Well, we use two things that most people can understand. The first is altruism, that when somebody wants to help somebody else, when you reach out to help somebody else, you expand your abilities. You draw forth a higher degree of excellence. People will make a better birthday cake when they're making it for somebody else than for themselves. Somebody sees someone drowning and they spontaneously jump in the water and save them. And after they pull them out, they realize, hey, I didn't know I knew how to swim. And they didn't until they jumped in. And, you know, in that act, they learned how. So there's a lot of stuff out there showing that when we reach out to help somebody else, it actually develops abilities in ourselves. So that's one thing, is the altruistic impulse. And then the second thing is what a group of people can bring to a difficult situation by each person contributing their partial insight. Each person only has a piece of the puzzle, but when they bring them all together, it's easier then to see what's going on. And most people are familiar with those two phenomena. So how do we bring those two things as pieces of leverage, you might say, into creating a dream exercise that really does help people remember their dreams, have a good dream, and discover its value? Well, what we do is we ask a person not to dream for themselves, but to dream for somebody else, to help out a stranger in distress. So let me describe the Dream Helper Ceremony to you. It's a very unusual. A number of doctoral dissertations have been written out of it. It came right out of the Edgar Cayce work, and it's one of the highlights of our Edgar Cayce Legacy Conference in October, Be Your Own Psychic. All we do, as you can imagine, there's a large group of people, like we might have 100 people at the conference, or it might be, could be from talking to some people who've done our training. It could be a small group at someone's home. But the idea is we ask, is there someone here who needs some help, who's going through some kind of a dilemma, some kind of an issue at home that's causing them emotional distress? We don't want to know what it is, but if you are troubled by some kind of a dilemma and you're willing to ask our group for help, then you raise your hand and you can be a volunteer. And we get a lot of volunteers who want to be dreamed for to get some help with some undisclosed problem. Then depending on the size of the group, like say, you know, usually try to get about 6 or 7 people to dream for each of what we call a focus person, a person who's going to be the focus for the dreaming. And all we have this group of people doing, they're very skeptical. They don't know how this is going to work, but they're willing to make the effort to attempt to remember a dream for this person. And all they do is they just sit with the person for just a moment of silence together to hear that person ask, please dream for me. And that person goes home and they write out their question and their issue, and they keep that totally secret. Nobody knows anything about it. The people all go home that night or back to their hotel room or wherever this is going on with instructions. They've promised to try to remember a dream, and they don't know if they're going to be able to do it. But the next morning, they're really surprised. Now, somebody from Columbia University came down to Virginia one summer and studied this, and they found that in groups that are trying to remember their dreams over a period of days and weeks, that when they conduct the Dream Helper Ceremony, it really spikes in dream recall. So we've proven that the Dream Helper Ceremony definitely improves dream recall. So you get these people coming back the next morning, and most of them said, I haven't had a dream for weeks, but I had one this morning, and that definitely works. So here you have all these people with the dreams, and they start telling the dreams, and it's a big mess. Like, you know, most of us know we have a dream. We don't know what it means. It's confusing and so on. But here's where the small small group comes in because of the commonalities of the dreams. So here, I'll give you an example. Here's a couple of dreams from a group. In one dream, the dreamer is driving in their car down the road, and they come to a traffic light turning red, so they stop. They wait, and the traffic light goes to green. They step on the gas pedal, but as they do so, they notice out of the corner of their eye that a car is running the red light, and so they better not enter the intersection until this car has gone through. So they hit their brakes. They let that car run through the intersection, and when it's safe, they step back on the accelerator and resume on their trip. And that's the first dream. The second dream from somebody else, they're watching television, and a commercial comes on. And at the commercial, they go into the kitchen, they pour themselves some coffee. They go into the refrigerator to get some cream, they take it over to pour it into their coffee, and it's just about ready to pour that cream in the coffee as they notice that it's soured. And so they throw that cream away. And so they go in the refrigerator and look, and there is another carton of cream, which they get. And they come and they pour it in their coffee, and they go back out in the living room and sit down as the commercials are over and their TV show resumes. Then you can see in those two dreams, there are no objects in common. One is television, the other one's cars, commercials, red lights, cream, coffee. Nothing in common, but most people can see that there is something in common between those two dreams. Both of those dreams are describing something where there is a kind of a predictable break in the activity, and then as a person's about to do something that's very habitual that they have done a million times, they notice just in the nick of time that something is not as it should be, and they're able to take some action to prevent an unfortunate thing from happening. So people can see that commonality, and as they discuss those kinds of commonalities, all the while the focus person is listening to this, we usually have them turn their chair around so people can't see their faces and how they're responding, and that leaves people free, you know, the dreamers, to talk very freely about what they're getting. Meanwhile, that focus person, their ears are just burning as they're hearing all this stuff. And what we've shown is that by discussing those commonalities and the things in the dreams, the average people with no psychological background, there's no psychologist in the group, there's no trainer in the group, it's just ordinary people, and all they're being asked to do is, here's a bunch of dreams you all had, what are you finding that they have in common? That people can do that and have such a discussion that when the person who is being dreamed for is allowed to finally speak and read the sentence or two they wrote the night before, everybody is amazed and flabbergasted that in their discussion, without knowing it, like blind men around an elephant, they have really well described all of the ins and outs of that person's dilemma and what's going on and so on. And tremendous help there.
We'll be right back with more with Henry Reed, Ph.D. on Reflections. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. Let's continue our discussion with Dr. Henry Reed.
That's just fantastic. But that's not it. That's not over. There's rest of the story, which brings in a whole other thing. Mm-hmm. And that is, we ask the people, we give them some simple instructions, to take their dreams back and interpret the dream for what it means for them. And we have developed over time, I'm considered to be one of the founders of the modern dream work movement, of developing ways for the average person on their own without professional help to get constructive use from their dreams. So we developed a lot of those kinds of methods. People interpret their dream for themselves, and when they go and share in the circle, what they find is, although everybody had a different dream, everybody has something similar to say, because as they understand their dream is showing them how they have identified with that focused person's issue. They have found something equivalent in their own life, and their dreams are helping them work with that equivalency, their equivalent issue. And now all of a sudden the dream helper ceremony has moved from where you have a bunch of people trying to help somebody in distress, and the person in distress has now become in effect their teacher who has showed them all what they're capable of, and now we have a little seminar going on about how different people handle a common issue in life. And so now you have a group of people who are functioning intuitively as a group, helping one another use their collaborative intuitions for gaining guidance about an issue that they all share in, and they didn't know it when they first met.
Wow.
So all of a sudden you're building a psychic community that are learning how to collaborate and work together, which is, you know, which is my whole point. You know, I'm not, I'm taking the kind of the forward aspects and implications of the Edgar Cayce readings. A lot of people take it and say, if Edgar Cayce could be a psychic, so could I, but I'll charge big bucks and I can help people and so on. And I'm not interested in training people to be psychics, to be reading, you know, seeing eye dogs for the blind. I'm interested in having everybody awaken to their abilities so that we can form together a different kind of culture. Like when I talk about, say, people are already intuitive. What they need to learn how is to be intuitive together, which requires, A, developing some trust in themselves, and then also giving that same kind of trust and patience to someone else in the process of learning this. I say, for example, in the nursing profession, probably in nursing journals, there's more use of the word intuition in the titles of the articles than in any other profession.
Hmm.
And I remember coming across an article on intuition in nurses where they talked about the older nurses use their intuition more frequently than younger nurses because they have more experience to draw upon, you know, and that really makes a lot of sense.
Oh, yes.
Here you have a situation today where a nurse walks by a room and there's this patient in the bed with all these wires and everything attached to him and all these readouts. Yet the nurse just senses that something's wrong, something's not right. So the nurse calls the doctor, and the doctor comes over and says, what's wrong? And the nurse says, well, there's just something not right. And the doctor says, well, all the meters say everything is okay. And the nurse says, yeah, but I just got this hunch that something's not right. Well, what's the doctor today going to say? Well, we can't go by hunches. We have to go by the meters because that's what the insurance companies require of us. And so nothing happens. But I say like this, if they could learn how to work together, the doctor's response could be more like this. So let's see, let me tune in and see what I get. And so the doctor kind of tunes in. So that's funny, you know, I'm getting kind of a, you know, it's kind of a funny, kind of an on-off, yes, no, high-low kind of a funny feeling like that. And the nurse might say, you know, that's interesting, doctor, because I'm getting kind of a woo-wah, woo-wah, woo-wah. And then I say, well, what does that remind you of? You know, I say, well, I know, could that be like a sodium chloride kind of thing? That? And the doctor, you know, that's interesting. Hey, why don't we go test this? And now they're working together, you see? But that wouldn't happen today because their society, we have not trained in how to work collaboratively with our own inner subjective impressions. And this is what goes on at our Edgar Cayce Legacy Conference, so that people can learn how to work together intuitively, which greatly enhances their intuitive ability, because a lot of this stuff goes on inside of us of things that we don't think is appropriate or relevant or whatever for sharing, so it never gets tested, brought out, and such. You ask one thing, that you can get everybody together. You know, people can argue all day about right, left, wrong, right, Democrat, Republican, or whatever. But, you know, is intuition real or is it the work of the devil? But if you ask a question, who has ever had the experience of regret over not following a hunch? Most everybody in the audience will raise their hand. And now we have everybody on the same page. Christian, Jew, whatever, housewife, mystic, and I ask the question, why didn't you follow that hunch, and what would it take for you to do so? Well, you know what the most common example people give of regret over not following a hunch?
What's that?
If they had the hunch, they shouldn't marry that person. And you ask them, well, why didn't you heed that hunch? And what is the answer? Well, the wedding invitations had gone out. We had already gotten the dress for the bride or all those external things. And what would people say if I said I had a hunch that I wasn't to marry the person? How can my inner feeling of a hunch stack up against all these externals? I mean, I can't point to the guy's got a bad criminal record or she hasn't been divorced from her previous husband. Or I don't have anything to point to except an inner experience. It's sort of like knowledge without credentials. And so it just seemed to be a captive of a private experience. And so intuition is left in this lonely, isolated kind of condition in our society. And it has no chance to be brought out and shared with others so that people can talk about it and compare and compare notes and see what works and what doesn't work and where people follow their intuitions and it worked out well and where they followed it and it didn't work out well and stuff like that, to get together and learn from one another.
Wow. So this is something people will be experiencing at the upcoming conference, Be Your Own Psychic. It's the Edgar Cayce Legacy.
Oh, yes, and they are amazed. That's why it is the longest-running program at the ARE. I don't know, we're probably in our 15th year of it or something like that. And there's a subgroup of the people who keep paying to come back. They come back year after year at a tremendously reduced fee to help the others and encourage them, you know, that you too can do this. This is very easy. This is very natural. We just have to have a very different headspace about it.
You also have a column in Venture Inward, the membership magazine of the ARE, on psi research, which is often on the top list of members' favorite magazine columns.
Yes.
How did that column come about?
Well, I guess it's primarily an expression of what you see in a lot of places today with the information overload, the information explosion. People know that there's a lot of stuff happening out there, but where are they going to hear about it? And so you might say information processors or you know, what's going on the web these days? You know, people, there's a word for it that's not coming to me, aggregate, where they go and aggregate news from various places and put it on their website.
The RSS feeds?
Kind of thing. That's what it is. It was just an attempt to bring to the awareness of our membership research going on in all different parts of the world and laboratories of various kinds that relate to the various kinds of new ideas associated with consciousness studies such as, you know, the work of Edgar Cayce.
Is there anything recently that you've learned that has surprised you?
Well, one of the things that I did learn that surprised me, that has proven to be very important in affecting how we train people, is that I was discovering, like in listening to people discuss how they felt about the Dream Helper ceremony after they had been dreamed for or they were a dreamer, and noticing that instead of saying and focusing on, wow, I'm psychic, I had a psychic dream, they were focusing on the good feeling of connectedness with other people. I really feel connected with the people. This experience makes me feel that I'm not alone. This experience gives me more confidence in myself. That they were expressing appreciation for certain things which, had I advertised them, come and learn how to feel better about yourself, they wouldn't have attended. Come and have your self-esteem go through the roof, they wouldn't have attended. Come and feel bonded to others, they wouldn't have attended. It was, come and discover that you are psychic. That's what made them come. But once they came, what was it that they liked about it was not the psychic aspect, but how that made them feel good as a person and close to others. I thought that was very significant.
Wow, that is interesting.
In the, you might say, the after effect, they are expressing indirectly values which, had you placed them in front of them, they wouldn't have necessarily done anything to obtain them.
We'll be right back with more. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. We're back with Henry Reed, Ph.D.
They actually have to experience it to appreciate the value of it.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's just very different from the, you might say, the cliche image people have of it.
Oh, yes. You
I
also
know of another place on the planet where training is offered like this, which all of the training exercises that I do, I've published in peer-reviewed journals. Journals that would ordinarily really not accept anything on a psychic stuff, but when I present it the way I do, they've published it. So the exercises that I share at the Legacy Conference all have that pedigree, that, what do you call it, provenance.
Oh, yes.
Behind them of credentials of the peer-reviewed journal articles. And where are we going to, I guess, have people go to henryreed.com, and there right on the front page is some links to these things. The ARE has a couple of my articles on their website, but most of them are on my own, henryreed.com.
So that's henryreed.com.
Yes,
Okay.
Right, they click on that, and they'd see an article right there where hearts are joined. And that would outline the whole history that I've been talking about, as well as, in the references, give links to all the other articles describing the exercises and stuff. So that would probably be one link that would then lead to all the rest, henryreed.com.
I see. And also, you have some e-groups coming up, one on developing your psychic ability. Will it be similar experience?
Is for people who cannot attend the Legacy Conference, I actually use a couple of the things from the conference as best we can in that kind of a context. And they start out with going on the internet, and we have some like computer ESP games to get them warmed up. And then depending, you know, they have the option. It's certainly not required, but those that are a little bit more adventuresome, to try doing some of the kinds of things we do at the Legacy Conference where they attempt to do readings for one another and do maybe even a remote viewing.
Wow. That's
so they get opportunities, although, you know, it's not a face-to-face thing, but again, it's something you can do in your own home. That's coming up in September. And for some people, that could be a good introduction, you know, to the kinds of things we'll do at the Legacy, except at the Legacy, of course, we're right there face-to-face, and we can have a little bit more delicious activities.
Well, we're about out of time. Do you have any final thoughts before we go?
Well, I know it really makes a difference how you feel about yourself and how you imagine yourself to be. And as long as you imagine yourself to be stuck inside this hollow container you call your body, that it's really a difficult process to grow. But once you recognize that what you are is experience, and then I think it makes it a lot easier then to explore these new dimensions of self and discover there's a whole new life out there to be lived, and you can just float along with the flow.
Wow. Well, thank you for all this fascinating information, and thank you for coming on the show today.
Okay, very good, and goodbye to you.
It's time for the Thought for the Day, and today's Thought for the Day will be read by Kimberly Rose. Kimberly Rose will be speaking at the upcoming Be Your Own Psychic training course at the ARE from October 19th to the 23rd. She'll also be at the National Association of Transpersonal Hypnotherapists annual conference from October 27th to November the 1st in Virginia Beach. That will be located at the Barclay Towers Resort Hotel. Kimmy will be doing a mediumship certification class and will be doing gallery readings and private sessions during the week. To find out more, go to kimmyrose.com. That's KimmyRose.com. Well, hello.
Hi.
And what's today's thought for the day?
This is reading 47037. Don't get mad and don't cuss a body out mentally or in voice. This brings more poisons than may be created by even taking foods that aren't good.
Wow.
Yeah, you're good at this one.
Oh, yes?
Because
you're at cursing?
You bring up, I've talked to you several times, and you're good about watching what you eat or, drinking water, but I'm not sure if you're good at the, like, it's thoughts create things, you know what I mean? And so you're very good at taking care of your body in a physical way, but this is really interesting because, like Louise Hay says, you know, what we say, we project within ourselves. And even Wayne Dyer says that when you're driving and you get mad at somebody, you've just killed cells in your brain cells. And if you think about it, when you get mad, you hold your breath and your body's not getting the oxygen in it.
Hmm. Well, I know that in the New Testament it says not to use foul language. And I always wondered about that, you know, does that have to do with spirituality, I guess, if somebody's using foul language? I was just curious about the connection, and it just says in the Bible, don't use foul language. And a lot of things it says and we don't understand, but it's interesting that Edgar Cayce said something similar, and he elaborated that this brings more poisons than may be created by taking foods that aren't good. So that just reemphasizes that. I mean, even if somebody might think if they're in their car, they can do all that. But, like you said, by saying it, it creates negativity that you're just piling on yourself, I guess.
That's the truth. And that I like the way that Edgar Cayce, I really believe that he was connecting with that truth, because here's another statement. When the Bible was written, what words were considered foul? You know what I mean? Like,
oh yes.
But it's the vibration. And Edgar Cayce is all, you know, talks all about vibration. That makes sense. Is it instills that negativity within you.
Wow. Well, thank you for doing the thought for the day today.
Thank you.
That's all the time we have for the show today. Thanks to Dr. Henry Reed for talking to us. To find out more about the Be Your Own Psychic, it's the Edgar Cayce Legacy Conference. Go to edgarcayce.org, click on Events, and then click on Conferences. To learn more about Dr. Reed's e-groups, go to edgarcayce.org, click on Education, and click on e-groups. Thanks to Kimberly Rose for the thought for the day, and most of all to you, the listener. Thanks for listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce.